Tim, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Good morning, Tess.
So you are an archaeologist, but tell me exactly what it is you do, what you've been up to.
I'm an archaeologist and I work here in Sydney and I also work in Adelaide. And I work in many different fields across archaeology. So archaeology classically defined as historical archaeology, and that covers everything from 1788 on, so both Aboriginal people and colonists, so all the way up to today. So archaeologists do study things that have happened just in the last few years, basically. But I also study Aboriginal archaeology and Aboriginal archaeology across Sydney in the last 50,000 years or so of Aboriginal occupation here.
And tell us about some of the breadth of the things that you work on, because I imagine there must be just so much within that even, you know, banner of Aboriginal archaeology.
Yeah, of course. So we work on all different types of places and different sites. In a commercial setting, we often work on sites that are going to be developed or need to be conserved, and there's aspects that need to be identified and conserved and kept within those. So we often work on sites that are of high significance. So, for instance, places like First Government House, the archaeology site down on Bridge Road, nationally heritage listed. But that site has Aboriginal connections. It has very, very significant connections to very early history and very early contact between Aboriginal people here in Sydney and the colonists or the invaders as they came in. So there's obviously everyone's heard of Bennelong, and you've got Collaby as well. Those two gentlemen were incarcerated, held in chains in the yards of First Government House. And through the archaeological record, there's actually evidence of Aboriginal people being inside First Government House. So there's material that's been brought in by them and manufactured by them as possibly they've sat in that yard. So there's tangible evidence of those activities and those people actually being present on that site.
And tell us about some of the other stuff that you find around Sydney. I mean, like I said, that must be a huge banner to try and narrow down. But I had no idea about that, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Western Sydney is just full of Aboriginal archaeology, Aboriginal heritage, Aboriginal places, Aboriginal meaning. It is a massive cultural landscape. So what that means is that there's tangible, there's physical things. There's also intangible values. Intangible values relate to story. They relate to creation. They can relate to traveling routes. They can relate to geographical features, trees, plants, animals, all the things that go to make Aboriginal tradition. And kind of, it's what Aboriginal people refer to as country. And it's underpinned by their spirituality and their belief of who they are. And then the material evidence that comes as a consequence of Aboriginal people having lived here for 40 to 50,000 years is just absolutely everywhere. So anywhere you go in Western Sydney, archaeologists and Aboriginal people who work with the archaeologists are able to find that material evidence. In Western Sydney, you often find stone artifacts. Around the coastlines of the harbour, you'll find art sites, engraving sites, shell middens. There's burials in some places. And there's a whole bunch, a range of evidence that allows us to understand the very, very long-term occupation of this area, this ancient country, by Aboriginal people. So it can be quite complex. One of the areas where archaeologists often go out and study as part of development areas. So where you see new houses popping up in Western Sydney, those areas will have been subject to archaeological assessment and often archaeological excavations prior to the houses being constructed. And so archaeologists and Aboriginal people from Western Sydney and people like the Land Council undertake detailed excavations in these areas. Now, the thing about archaeology in Western Sydney is it's often buried. So when you go out and walk around, you often don't see the archaeology on the surface. You can understand the landforms and the landscape, but it's the knowledge of the Aboriginal people informing the archaeologists that allow us to understand the places that Aboriginal people used to occupy for thousands and thousands of years. And so Through the knowledge and the skill of the archaeologists and the Aboriginal people, we're able to identify those places and then undertake detailed excavation on them to recover material culture from the past.
Do you have any, I suppose, favourite sites or ones that have particularly interested you?
Yeah, a really, really good example is down at East Leppington, so down southwest in Sydney, where we undertook several months of archaeological research and excavation. And when we walked into that, we knew it was a historic landscape. It was an early colonial grant, and there was an old homestead there, and you could see the archaeology of that sitting on these hills. But as we started talking to the local Aboriginal people, they started telling us about the connection with these hills and the view corridors. And in fact, if you go up one of the hills, you face one way and you can see the Blue Mountains, and you face the other way and you can see the three CBDs. You can see Parramatta, you can see North Sydney, you can see the Harbour Bridge, and you can see the Sydney CBD. It's quite an amazing view because we're about 15, 16 kilometres away from the city. That's the view today. But the Aboriginal people told us that these hills were really important. They told us they were connected to tradition, to corroborees, to travelling routes, and there were locations people would have gone up and used to understand where everyone was across the Cumberland Plain. And they told us that there might not be archaeology on these hills, but these hills had an intangible connection. Then they also told us that the areas around the hills in the lower lying areas could have a lot of archaeology in them. And so when we started to investigate this, we found that there were particular places in this landscape where Aboriginal people appeared to have come back to time and time again. And I don't mean come back to on a Wednesday and then 2 weeks later come back to again. I'm talking coming back to the same location over thousands and thousands of years. And the way we managed to prove that is through what we call stratigraphical excavation. So when we find a location, we're able to take away the soil piece by piece from the top. It's like a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. And as you excavate down through these sites, the alluvium, so the waterborne material that's deposited by flooding, has buried the older archaeology. So the archaeology at the bottom of the excavation is a lot older than the archaeology at the top. And we're able to examine that dating through two means. So we could undertake OSL dating, so optically stimulated luminescence of the actual alluvium. So that's looking at the sand grains that are contained within the alluvial clays and actually dating them. We send them to a lab in the UK to do that. That's a bit beyond my skill. And then we often look at the carbon. So we try and pair it with carbon, do carbon dating of features like burning features, hearth features, and cooking features. And so what we found was that this alluvium had been set down over about 10,000 years or so. And then we looked at the archaeology that was coming out from the different layers. And we identified changes over time in the stone artifacts being made and being used by the Aboriginal people on this site. So the lower levels had a particular stone, often in this site a red stone called silkreet, and that's ubiquitous across the Cumberland Plain. But in later times, in the last 1,000 years or so, Aboriginal people started using a quartz material, and they started changing the technology by which they actually manufactured the stone artifacts. So in the later times, they use quartz and they use this different technique of production. And you can actually see that archaeologically. So you have the actual evidence of the people manufacturing over time these stone artifacts. The technology of stone artifacts, I equivocate to how mobile phones change. So in the 1980s, you had large bricks that you had to carry around and they became smaller in the 90s and they became really, really tiny. And then in the last 10 years or so, our phones have got bigger again because we have a different use for them. It's the same as stone artifacts. So 20,000 years ago, stone artifacts were big chunky things just roughly hewn from large slabs of stone. And then in the last 10,000 years, they started to manufacture very specific tools, much smaller tools, really, really specific tools. And then in the last 1,000 years, again, they changed. They changed the technology, they changed the manufacturing technique, and they changed what was actually wanted to be produced. And there were many reasons why these things were changed. So.
Oh, it's very, very cool. I could talk about it all day. But before I do let you go, Tim, I know you've got a bit of a History Week event to tell us about.
Yeah, so next week's History Week, and there's a couple of events on. So if you just type in History Week into the browser, you'll obviously be able to find the relevant websites. There's an event that's happening in the company I work for called GML Heritage, Unearthing Memory and Myth. And if you just Google or look up Unearthing Memory and Myth, you can find a link to the event, and there'll be four speakers talking about different aspects of memory and myth and connections to and between places, landscape, and things like that. So I'll be talking about looking at Aboriginal memory and concepts of memory and continued landscape use over a long time. We'll have Minna, who's a regular on this show, I believe, and she's going to be talking about Second World War internment camps. We have a lovely archaeologist from Ireland who now works here, and he's going to be discussing memory and myth in the Irish landscape. And then we have Angie So, who's going to be looking at archaeology, historical research, and interpretation planning, and how you can get intangible values into interpretation in the landscape.
Tim, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure.